Welcome to This Is Not About Your Body, a body neutrality podcast where we talk about all the real shit body image issues are actually about because they're never just about the way you look. I am your host, Jesse Nealand, and today I have with me M. Reynolds, who is a transgender parent to two children in a blended family and who shares her journey of self-discovery and transition and encourages open and honest conversations about gender identity on her Instagram account, The M. Reynolds. I'm so excited to have her on here. I've actually followed for so long now. I feel like I know you, but this is the first time we're connecting. So welcome, M.
Thank you so much. It's weird too, because we have followed each other for so long and I think like chatted in messages too, that I was actually like, when I went back and looked at like podcasts that I've done too, I was actually kind of surprised that we had never done a podcast or anything before, because it just felt like at some point we had had a conversation, because we've talked many times, but we had never. So this was it. It was just one of those moments. Yeah. So
I followed you back. I don't remember what your actual handle was, but your account for a long time was about being a girl dad.
Yes.
And I find that so like just delicious now.
Yeah.
And it's been such a pleasure to watch your journey unfold. And I'm my first question is like, I'm curious how you came across, or when maybe you came across, the language and concepts that you needed to be able to understand yourself as trans. Because yeah. I feel like that's kind of a recent transition, and so many people, I mean, culturally speaking, so many people, like I did not grow up knowing that these words were options, that I could be non-binary, that these were things that existed, you know?
No, it's the exact same kind of situation for me. I think that without trying to be a progressive parent who was talking to their kids regularly about like, you know, sexual and reproductive health education and everything, I never would have come across terms like trans and things like this. And I think that I talk about this a lot of times in therapy and everything, is that a lot of the language and a lot of the education just simply wasn't out there in accessible ways for my parents and everything. So there's a relationship I have with my parents that's very much not like, you were withholding this information from me.
Yeah.
It was also not being given to you in a way that you could share with me. So like you're mentioning, the words trans and stuff weren't just things that, and there was no representation on TV. There just wasn't anything that I was seeing that was like, wait a second, that's me. And so as we were talking to our kids about what gender is, and as more discussion about being trans and non-binary came up, it did start to kind of fall into place a little bit more about, hold up, like I'm talking about these things, but I'm also learning about things for myself in these moments. So it was one of those moments of like teaching things to my kids is also an opportunity for me to learn things about myself. And that's just kind of how things unfolded. And it was a lot of like reading other people talking about their trans kids that was kind of like,
yeah,
well then maybe trans kids applies to a 40-year-old as well. So it was, and you know, you see a lot of the like you know, it's never too late to come out, but then like a lot of like, maybe it's never too late to transition as well. And so there's been some difficulties and some differences around transitioning later in life, but also that the opportunity is there still for me to do this at now the age of 45. So that's kind of how it evolved and continued to happen and continues to happen today as well. So,
yeah. So looking back, are there any things that you can point to that like when you had the language and concepts available immediately kind of clicked into place and started to make sense about your experience or life?
Yeah, it certainly, I mean, I wore dresses when people left the house and everything. So there are those, those things that just did not get put together. And again, it's not that they didn't get put together because of huge amounts of shame or anything. There was just no, there was no what if. The closest I ever came to it was, you are gay. Because that's the only thing that I ever saw was that, if you're wearing a dress, you are a feminine presenting man. If you're a feminine presenting man, you are a gay man. And so that was the closest I ever got as a child to seeing myself as something other than a cis straight man. or cis straight boy at the time.
Sure.
So there are pictures of me like grabbing my mom's heels and walking around the house and everything too. And you know, at the time it never really clicked. And then looking back, obviously there's a little bit more like puzzle piecing, you know, that not everyone has or everything, but there is those kind of click into moments. But then a lot of it too is just that, because I think a lot of it too, when you don't find the thing that quite clicks in, there becomes a lot of like repress, repress, repress and everything. And so a lot of that happened for me. And so I did very well at that everyday girl dad presentation. And then this heavily bearded person who walked around and talked a lot about the roles of, you know, a more healthy masculinity for men and everything. And that was the kind of role that I took on as a parent. And looking back now, I mean, there was lots of ways that I did just kind of want to do things differently than a lot of the more masculine examples that were put in front of me. And there's a lot of, I still strongly believe in more healthy masculinities. And I think that looking back now, there's certainly a lot of examples, and there's certainly a lot of like, I think there's still ways we can change things. And there's a lot of things that I still like to, I think an interesting thing I'm doing now is trying to take a look at what old me was doing that new me still wants to keep. Cause I think that one of the actions that I kind of instinctively look to do is reject everything that old me was as part of a transition. Because it's like, if you're transitioning, you must want to transition out of all of it. But there's a lot of cool pieces of previous me that now that I've been transitioning for a bit, I'm like trying to do the activity of being like, you know what? I still like sports. I don't have to reject sports, right? So there's a lot of those things and actions that I'm trying to take step by step now. So
I like that. I can't remember now. I'm blanking on the author and title of the book name, but I just finished this book where she talked a lot about, it was a transgender author who talked a lot about oppositional sexism versus traditional sexism.
Right.
And I'd heard the terms floated, but she just presented it so beautifully. And so much, I think, of our definitions of man and woman are literally defined by not being the other one. And so I do feel like that impulse to throw everything out and start over comes from that oppositional sexism idea.
Completely.
Like they never the two shall meet, you know, that's how we view gender.
Exactly. And I think that that's part of where like going through like this period too, where I was just like, I didn't one day wake up and say, I am a trans woman. I went through a period where it was kind of like more of a like floating through more of a non-binary phase and trying to figure out what things were happening. And I think the chance to really play around and figure things out. And, you know, like I'm going to be going through a few like procedures and everything. And I think the opportunity, even going through those things, it still exists that there's more growth to happen after, like that doing that doesn't end my journey or everything with gender. And I think that that's a lot of the ways that I've needed to learn to look at gender. And that the first time that I did look at that thing of like, I don't need to reject everything that was old me in order to be able to move forward in a kind way with myself. And it still takes a lot of work, because you do go back into those old things and you think of old memories, and it does relate to what you think of sometimes as almost a different person, but it's still the same you, just presenting differently and everything.
Totally.
So it's interesting.
I have in my family lore, there's like this notebook my mom kept when we were all little and just wrote down cute, funny stories, whatever, about us. And one of them was me, like four, maybe five or something, being like, you know, just piping up from the back of the car, like, you know, mommy, if I had a penis and a vagina, then I could be a boy and a girl. You know, like, there's like these little things that I feel like later in life, especially as I'm trying to explain it to my parents, which has been very, very challenging, just to be like, it's always been there. Like, it's always been me, and we didn't have the words, so I don't blame anyone for not seeing it. I didn't know I could see it, but like, I also feel sometimes when looking at people who are like opposed, you know, transphobic people who talk about the oppose rights and policies and all these things that I'm like, oh, you don't know any trans people. If you think that this is something that can happen like that, that people are making like these flash decisions, you've obviously never met a transgender person. That's
exactly.
all.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a long, slow unfolding process.
It is. And I think that that's what's really helped me too, is getting to meet other trans people, you know, and like gender nonconforming people and everything who are going through similar things and who've helped me realize that it isn't that flick of a, you know, like it's not that snap of the fingers and everything feels better and everything. It's going through constant growth and it's going through, it's not as if you wake up and you make a decision and everything feels better. It's a constant reassessment and growth and reevaluation and understanding where you want to go with things and how you as an individual want your transition or something to go. There isn't one way to transition and there isn't one end path. And it's all something that we're doing differently. And we can all do that like together. And like you said, it's someone who just thinks that there's a, you know, that someone watches a video with a trans person in it and says, boom, well, that's, you know, I'm trans now. It's like you can see someone and finally understand that this is something that is available. This is something that is an option and know that trans people exist and can be happy as trans people. But that doesn't turn you trans. That like shows you that there can be happiness and that there can be an existence for trans people and stuff. So it's such a wide and vast difference and such an expansive group of people. So
I like what you're saying about how there is no one right way to transition. I think, again, this is for folks who are not exposed to these communities or concepts very often. That is not a given, because so many things in life, there's pretty much one way to do it. I mean, plenty more nuance exists, but this, I think people don't realize how much it is a choose your own adventure experience. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious for you, how you have made the decisions you've made, like each kind of turning point in terms of transition, what has made that feel like the right choice, or how that process has looked?
Yeah, there's been like a lot of self-reflection, obviously. And there has been, I mean, I've been socially transitioned, I suppose, or transitioning for close to 4 years at this point. And I started hormone replacement therapy 2.5 years ago, I guess. And each time I've made the decisions, it's been like a balance of a lot of it, certainly what I feel is something I want to do, and then a lot of it talking with a family, talking with some trans community, you know, just online, like in messages and stuff, about some of the challenges people have faced and some of the difficulties, but then also some of the happy moments people have felt as well, right? So, and I've talked about some of the things I was nervous about at first, like with going on hormone replacement therapy medication. I was really scared that I would be turned away by my doctor at first, because there was a huge, I was very nervous that, again, I wouldn't be trans enough, that I wouldn't be able to answer things in a way that a medical professional would be like, well, no, I don't think that you count. Or so I think there was a lot of fear in those early moments that I wouldn't be seen kind of by the medical community, that something that I really wanted would be shut down at the medical professional stage. And so it was hard to proceed and kind of hide just how much fear I had about that, while also sharing as much as I could with people around me to let them support me as much as they could in those moments. And then going forward from there, it's like a combination of seeing daily how much new legislation comes up about anti-trans access to things. And it makes it really difficult to try to make decisions that are best for you in a period of time that is right for you, because you see that people are trying to reduce the amount of care for something that you really want to access. And so you're kind of trying to balance this. When is the next election? When is the next this? And so will, you know, looking at people's platforms of, will they want to take this away from me? Do I need to start acting on this now? This is something I want to do. Will my work cover any part of this? So like on April 23rd, I'm very excited to announce, I am going in for facial feminization surgery. And so it is extremely expensive though. And like talking about the accessibility of all this thing is like another portion of like trans healthcare. And so that's another reason why it's really important for me to talk about the what a transition does mean. And because I am fortunate enough to be able to access the funds through partial loans and everything, to access that care as something that I want as part of my transition. But it's not accessible to everyone to be able to go through that. And I think that that's a really important part when we talk about what makes up everyone's transition, is there are pieces that may make up someone's transition that isn't available to them. And that doesn't reduce the validity of anyone's transition either, is that access to something is really difficult a lot of the time, even if a state or a province doesn't restrict it, it's still really expensive and wait times are astronomical a lot of the times and everything. So there's so many roadblocks.
Are you in Canada?
I'm in Canada.
Is it, I mean, I don't actually know how it is there. I know how it is here, but is it similar? Do you know?
Yeah. So Canada is currently undergoing its own renaissance of trans.
That's unfortunate.
Like, yeah. So we have
Canada little bit better off than us.
So because we have the same, we have like national healthcare, but provinces each are responsible for managing their own healthcare. And so different provinces, the more conservative, the more they are introducing similar kind of restricting youth access to like hormone blockers or any, you know, the same kind of bathroom bills, the same kind of, you're starting to see it more and more start to build up as we see the same kind of fear mongering.
Oh, that's so frustrating.
For zero, with zero proof of anything, with zero, just with words coming up versus facts, right? So the more people just share words and unfounded fears, the more governments are implementing laws to ban things. It's becoming difficult in that regard. So
so you mentioned being able to talk to your family as part of your process, which is one of the things I think is really cool, seeing you talk to your kids, your partner. Like, these have been things that you've sort of shared as you've gone along. How has that been, like, for them, for you? How have those conversations felt?
It's like ongoing, interesting, neat. Like with this upcoming thing, it's the first kind of, I shouldn't say the first major thing, because they've all been major kind of announcements, but like, I think it's the first thing, I guess the first big adjustment was a name change. That was a very big switch, I suppose. And switching from using a term like dad was probably our longest, like the longest transition. And we don't use mom for me. We use M, and our kids use M for me, and I love it. I'm fine with it.
I love that too, yeah.
But we went on vacation once and the kids were yelling dad across the pool at me. And I was there in like a one piece bathing suit. You know, I was feeling good about myself and they're yelling over dad. And I said, okay, like this was a year into even like hormone treatment and everything. Oh, and I was just like, okay, we've managed this in the house. I've been okay with it in the house, but we're going to put a stop to it right now.
Yeah.
If you want to call me M, you yell M as loud as you want, but we have to switch away from dad because it's now officially a little too difficult for me to manage it. If mom isn't going to work for us, I don't need that. I don't need to be called mom. That's
Yeah.
not something that I need personally. But it's each time something changes, like we kind of navigate it all together, which is something I have been very happy to do with them because I don't
Yeah.
like the idea, because they're huge changes for kids as well. And I
Sure.
know that the kids really see me. And I mean, I have a trans child as well. And so I know my kids like understand all this and get all of this. And I know they support me hugely. Charlotte, my youngest, does like my makeup all the time and does my hair and stuff.
I
So
love that.
it was like this one little roadblock thing. And like we like to work together to find those little solutions to things. And that was the first one that we kind of had to do this. And now this next one, which will be a significant kind of change to like physical features,
Right.
is the next kind of bigger piece that's appearing. And I won't be able to see them for the first little bit afterwards. And we're trying to figure out how, like, I'm scared to see my face. They're scared to see my face.
Yeah,
So there's a lot of
right.
this kind of like, what's going to happen? And I think that it's one of those things too that we can plan only so much until we're in it
Yeah.
and moving through it. And we'll probably cry together and go through all of these
Sure.
feelings. And luckily we're a family that cries together often. So whatever, we will move through that and have
Right.
discussions and talk about those things. And, hopefully a few weeks after, Charlotte can do makeup again, kind of thing, and we'll be
Right,
able to
right.
move through all of those pieces. So, yeah.
It's so interesting because I feel like the way that you found the concepts and language through the parenting of a maybe gender nonconforming child and wanting to make sure that it kind of went that direction and then hit you, as opposed to just you discovering it sort of outside the family, in secret and then bringing it in or something like that. Like, there's something so inclusive about that process. And I see that, and maybe this is also just your family culture being really open and talking about stuff, but I think that's pretty unusual and really cool.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, it's one of those things that I don't even know how, like, when things would have been noticed by either one of us if the other one wasn't transitioning, if the other, it's
Right,
one of
right.
those weird things that just kind of evolved over time. And we just make jokes when we're like, this one time we saw a band that kind of had both of our dead names in it. And so we just kind of, there's these little things that just pop up every once in a while that we kind of just smile about. And it's a weird kind
Yeah.
of bonus relationship thing to have and to just kind of
Yeah.
get to smile about every once in a while. And it's an interesting way to get to have this little bonus, like wink,
Yeah.
wink, nod, nod thing with
That
him.
is
So it's kind of
sweet.
neat. Yeah, it's nice. And it's like, I don't know how things would have evolved otherwise if one of us wasn't trans, like what the
Right.
process would have been for the other one, like what the timeline for coming out would have been
Yeah,
otherwise.
that's
So,
interesting.
yeah.
So something that I love about the way that you put content out is, I feel like similarly to what you're saying here, you do not shy away from the hard parts, the struggles. I think you do a really great job of sharing things like mental illness, medication, just different things that really normalize stuff. But it also has quite a bit of content about pleasure, privilege, and joy of the transition and of basically learning to become your authentic self later in life and express that. And I love that so much. And I wanted to have you maybe talk about some of the most affirming or joyful parts of your transition or anything that kind of comes to mind that's been like a real pleasure.
Yeah, like I've tried to be more intentional about that. At first I tried to be more intentional about sharing the difficult parts because
Sure.
I wasn't seeing as much as the difficult parts, and I wanted to be open about not having had that kind of coming out as trans and then suddenly my life was better. I came out as
Yeah.
trans and things still felt hard.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't this kind of come out and there were bright lights everywhere and
Right.
life felt better. And I put on a dress and suddenly I felt the real me. It was like, it was still really difficult. And there's still a lot of difficult moments. And because in a lot of posts I was seeing, I mean, just because I was posting more about trans content, I was being fed a lot more trans content. I was seeing so much more like of the really joyful stuff, and which is nice to see. But what I needed at the moment was someone saying it's valid for you to be struggling and still be trans. And so in the beginning, I was trying to be more mindful of sharing. It's still okay if you're having difficulty transitioning and you're still really cool and really awesome.
Right.
And then I was like, oh man, I'm really sour right now. Like, I am still having fun. Like, this is still really cool. And I think that when I tried to start to find the balance a little bit more, the people around me probably felt happier. And
sure.
And I felt happier. And some of the things for me, hair is a big one. I love, I mean, the other thing is, we talked about mental health a little while ago. Hair is one of my biggest weaknesses when my mental health is down, to just say I'm cutting it all off. And so hair, trying to grow up my hair has been an ongoing battle, and I've cut it off and I am so determined to not cut it off this time. I tell my partner probably once a month, I'm cutting it all off, and they refuse to let me do it. And so that's been a good part.
Wait, what's the driving urge to cut it off about?
I don't, because I know it's a non-violent action against myself that I can do. So it's like something I can do that won't leave like marks on my body. I can get rid of my hair and not have hurt myself and just do that.
I totally understand.
So my
that,
hair
yeah.
is there and I'm just like, oh, I can take care of you right now. And and so I've been very good since the last incident at not doing it. And so that's probably something that I love doing. And then finding my style has been something that I have also
I've really enjoyed
really,
seeing you
really
play and
enjoyed.
Explore
Oh,
the style.
It's something that I just adore endlessly. I think that if I had a little bit more patience and time, makeup is something as well, but style I just love. I can't get enough of it. I talk about it like with Hannah all the time. We're like, I want to learn how to layer a bit better. I want to learn how to do this and that a bit better. And it's something I'm working on as well, is like, I've been transitioning for a while now, and I still need to work on taking the looks I have in the house and moving them out in public. I still worry a lot about public more when I'm leaving the house on my own. If I'm leaving the house with someone else, I can leave wearing more of what I like to wear. But if I'm leaving to go to work for the day or something, like, and just leaving on my own, walking to work on my own, it's a lot harder for me to put on something that I like. So if I have partner with me, or if I have kids with me, or so if I have people with me, I find it a lot easier to wear something that I like. But if I'm on my own, I have a lot more fear of just wearing cool clothes, wearing clothes I want to wear. So I'm still able at this point to wear more of what I like, but it's more of a toned down version of what I like when I go out in public if I'm on my own. But those are some of the things that I have just really loved kind of exploring, for sure.
I love seeing
and earrings it. And earrings. Oh my God, earrings too.
You
Something
do
that
really
I can do
rock earrings.
Forever.
I appreciate that. Out of curiosity, and I clearly, if you have this surgery coming up, there's at least some pathway, even if it's short term here. But do you have like a goal in mind, like an aesthetic end point that you imagine yourself getting to stylistically or visually or anything like that?
If I could wear, like, I just ordered from a place called Red Sky, this like, or Hannah ordered it for me. I did not order it. I put out feelers that I was going to order it, and Hannah ordered it. It's like this almost like grandma's quilt, like turned into like this short dress, and it is to die for. And it's like, so it's like that. And I see these, like, it's just something else that I'm kind of going through now is also like I'm 45 and like trying to manage the aging process while also going through transition is like, I keep getting tattoos and I keep getting all of these things. Like, aging to me is crap. Like, I am going to continue getting tattoos and I'm going to keep dyeing my hair. I'm going to keep doing all of these things. And just because I didn't transition at the age of 40 to like mute myself and like tone myself down, like, I want to continue like standing out. Like, previously, that's what I did. I wore bright shirts. I had a big beard and like I got lots of tattoos and stuff. And I don't want to, just because I'm getting older, say, well, I'm transitioning. I should probably start saying that's not for me anymore. It's still for me. I'm still doing all of this. And now I get to do it as M. And that's like a really cool opportunity to like kind of reshift like what all of this looks like me looks like to me. And so like when I look at bathing suits and everything, I want them to be super bright. And I want them to, like, when like Hannah got me like a stick and poke tattoo kit for my birthday, and like yesterday we did one a few days ago, and like I went and put on a bathing suit so I could see where I would need the tattoos put, so that it's like to fill spaces for that and everything. So I just want to be, I guess, like loud and obnoxious. Like,
I love that.
I want people to have to turn their heads and look at me as they walk past and stuff. Like, that's kind of the goal. Like, that is the aesthetic, I guess. So, yeah.
So how would you describe I'm trying to put into words, like tattooed coastal grandma, or like, you know what I
That's
mean?
the word grandma was in it. So like when I was thinking of my style, it would have been like, yeah, like tattooed granny chic kind of thing. Like
That's so
that,
good.
there's no way what I am looking for doesn't have grandma in it. And it's like, I think it's just like repositioning what the grandma is. It's just like totally like that advanced style kind of Instagram, Pinterest vibe granny. So, but yeah, I'm just gonna ride it out with that. So,
Well, that is delightful. I was curious also, like you said that you've been wearing dresses like when nobody else was home, you know, your whole life maybe, but was there a time, did you feel scared the first time that you wore one with people that you knew or in public? Like, did it ever have that kind of
no, terrified. Yeah,
that
terrified.
feeling?
Yeah. Like both in the like the fear of what other people might think, because the first time that I was wearing dresses too, I still had a beard. I still had so I started wearing dresses as I shifted myself into that, just experiencing gender differently. Just wearing a dress, still, in a little bit more of the masculine mode, hadn't started my electrolysis, hadn't started any of this. And I think the other part that became difficult is that sometimes when going out and sometimes when being out, there were moments where people would make comments. And I think that when you have that added, like proof point of like people making awful comments to you, then it becomes a little more difficult to subsequently go out. And so I think that I was terrified at first about what people might say, and then really worried going forward because there was proof that people would say what I was worried they might say. And so now I'm still, it's still, like I said, it's a little more difficult when I go out on my own, but I can still do it. The thing I try to work on now more is looking up when I'm walking on my own, is just keeping my eyes up, because I do have a tendency to just look down and try to just negate any potential negative interactions by looking at my feet. And if I don't make eye contact with people, there's less of an opportunity for them to give me a look, to do anything like this. But it also reduces the opportunity for smiles. It lessens the opportunity for me to just be prideful. So there is that, it is something that I try to be more conscious of, is to just walk with my head up a little bit more. And whether or not that's actually looking at people, I just want to have my head raised a little bit more. And so it is actually very much a conscious choice. And I'm most mindful of it when I'm at work, to just, when I'm walking straight, keep my head up and actually look at where I'm going, and be like proud of who I am, and not to be afraid of what other people are thinking, because I know I'm really happy about who I am. And while I'm still scared of things, I know I'm happy with who I am. And so it's that little shift in things that I'm trying to do for myself. So
I could totally see how that body language would impact you too. Like, I know when my mental health is not doing well, I have very collapsed body language, and the thought of standing up tall feels impossible. And when I'm feeling great, I stand up tall, and it's like a positive feedback loop. I also know for me, because, ephemimania, right? Like the panic about an obsession with people who seem to have male privilege or otherwise, be assigned male at birth or whatever, adopting anything feminine is so much more vehemently opposed than its reverse. So for me, I remember like first time I wore a binder, first time I wore a suit, like I'd be really amped up, but only because it felt so vulnerable. Like, oh my God, everybody can see this weird thing about me that I've always felt, right? Not because I would be getting those kinds of actual violent or cruel comments that are unfortunately pretty common. And so the question of like, oh, I can just go be myself, even with body image stuff, I feel like I'll often do this with clients, like challenging them to fear face around clothing, whatever it is that they've wanted to wear but been afraid to wear because of their body shape or size or whatever. Certainly, depending on the person and their body, there is a higher or lower chance that their fears are going to be proven to be true.
And I think that that was one of the things. So I went to like inpatient therapy a couple of years ago, and that was one of the things that I had to work through with my therapist as well, is that when we were working on some exposure therapy around some of that stuff with me. And I think that that's the same thing that we had to work through, is that with different people and with different groups, there really is a higher chance that that fear really may happen. And so it's not, it's it was for me also preparing for what if it did happen. And if it did happen, how do I move through that moment kind of thing, right? So knowing now that it can happen, but if it happens, how do I treat that moment? Like, what do I do in that moment instead, right? So it's now no longer like a see, go and do it and you'll see that nothing is going to happen. It's not
Right,
like you're
exactly.
making it all up in your head. Nothing is going to happen. So no, it can happen, but it's, what if they yell at you, and if they say something rude to you and you keep walking past them, you can go, you can sit down, you can take a deep breath, you
Right.
can, you
Take care of
can
yourself.
read something you wrote for yourself or something like this. Things, it's now no longer in the realm of this isn't going to happen. It may happen. So what is the plan for doing it
Totally.
if it does happen in that regard? Because it can happen. It's no longer a space of, it's not going to happen to you.
Yeah,
I
you're
promise,
being silly.
it's
You're
not going to happen.
being, yeah.
So it
Absolutely.
is really good to recognize that in certain groups and certain people, it's a different kind of way of working through something that someone really wants to do, and helping them get through that moment in a different way. So.
Also, I would say when I work with marginalized clients, a major focus is on the meaning that we assign to those moments, because there's no difference whatsoever in whether it happens. Like, you can't control other people's behavior. That part, right. No matter what you believe and feel, is not going to impact assholes being assholes. But when someone is an asshole to you and you tell yourself the story, it's because I deserved it, or there's something wrong with me or my body that made them do that, versus they are an asshole and they are accountable for their totally uncool behavior just now. Like, that is a major internal difference that can change your life, even though nothing externally is necessarily going to be different, which is shitty, because recognizing these kinds of injustices for folks in marginalized bodies is sometimes really depressing.
Yeah.
But also, there is that internal difference when you're not telling yourself the story that, like, oh, it's because there's something bad about me.
Sure. I feel like I just got a little therapy session right there. So you'll have to send me a little bit of my bill for that portion right there. And yeah, I was like, hey, I'm taking this part in right now, because this is going to help me moving forward. I'll have to use that part.
Oh, I hope it does. Okay. So speaking of which, I wanted to ask, a lot of people will ask me about the difference between gender dysphoria and, like, body image issues. So I wanted to ask, have you had body image issues that felt separate from gender dysphoria? Have you had gender dysphoria that felt separate from body image issues?
Yeah. I've really luckily experienced both, for sure.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah. It's really magical. And it's difficult to kind of separate them, I realize sometimes, because I certainly had them years and years, my whole life growing up. And so what's been difficult is kind of realizing now that a lot of what I had growing up may have also been related to gender things, but I've had body image issues for life. I've been the Weight Watchers person. I've been the disordered eating person for forever, regardless of it being transition time or not transition time. And that is something that has been it's continued to be challenging through a transition, because as part of transition too, there are parts of me that hormones are doing that I'm like, would restricted eating, would disordered eating help emphasize things that I would like to see emphasized right now? And it's become like this two-headed monster that's really difficult at times to try to navigate away from.
And I'm sure you know this, but transgender women, I don't think they're diagnosed as much, but the research shows that they have eating disorders at way higher rates than cis.
Yeah, I read that fairly recently, I suppose. Yeah. And again, because of what was happening
in my head
at the time, it was felt completely, it almost, I mean, because of the state of mind I was in at the time, it almost gave me like this free pass to continue eating in the disordered way I was.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's almost like, I was almost like, yeah, I told you, like, I'm supposed to be doing this because this is what trans women do.
Wow.
And it was like, I could see it so clearly that it almost became another tool in transition. It was almost like, there are surgeries if you want, there are hormones if you want, eating disorders available to you if you want. Like, you know, it was almost like part of a list that you could click and be
interesting.
Like, yeah, the way that I was viewing it was so, I mean, unhealthy, obviously, but it certainly was a way, because there are a lot of things that hormone replacement therapy doesn't change in you as well. And you're so, I don't know if, I mean, I should say I am so desperate at times to change certain things, and there are a limited number of things you can do in a healthy way to change those things. And so disordered eating is one of the things that I have turned to, and as a way to say, I can alter my body this way. If hormones aren't doing it, I can do this, and I can't afford surgery on these pieces. So why don't I go back to this? You know, so it is one of those things that I can so easily see why it would be something that someone might look to. And it's sad. It is really,
that's brutal.
It's hard and it's relatable and it's difficult to,
it just
like,
also makes so much
understand.
Damn sense. Like the,
that's, yeah,
it's the legacy of womanhood, unfortunately. Like to, first of all, now your body is up for scrutiny. Everybody feels entitled to have an opinion on it, right? Like it changes like certain perceptual things. It's about aligning with an authentic sense of yourself aesthetically and visually. Of course you would want to make these changes that would feel more in alignment. And also there is just like the, I think, you know, statistical differences in size, height, weight, whatever between men and women that we see and want to play out. And my God, of course that would happen.
Yeah. And it's interesting talking about it now because I've even written a post about it that I've never published because there's also so much shame around talking about it. And it's it's so difficult to talk about. But it's there, it's present. And like I talk about a lot of other things. I've talked about my mental health and inpatient treatment and self-harm and, you know, there's lots of things that I have talked about, and the one thing and stuff, it's very difficult to talk about, I find. So
well, it's I mean, it's so much my world that I'm like, of course, like it's not a shamey place to it's where I, you know, live and breathe. But I also can totally understand. I think part of the question that I was originally asking, like, how do you sort of differentiate, if you do, between gender dysphoria and body image issues? It's the exact sticky line in the middle, which makes it not super empowering and affirming exactly, because it could, you know, it could be lethal, right? It's dangerous. It's bad for your health. And also it's empowering and affirming in certain ways. And it's just messy. It's right in that middle line.
Yeah. And I mean, this is why I can tell, and I know it's in your wheelhouse. And this is how, I mean, at the start, I said, I will talk about anything. And it's nice to be able to just have these conversations where things happen, you know, just like in conversation. And the way that this topic has come up just in relation to everything makes it so much more comfortable to just talk about it while talking with other pieces of me. Being trans and everything, because it's too hard to separate one piece from all of it. It's so interrelated and everything, and all of it means so much. And I think you brought up the part too about, like, you know, I'm taller and I'm a little bit, and when I was doing Weight Watchers before, I lost weight so fast, and like it still comes back to me as like that, as like an option for me of, well, I can do this so fast if I'm just like really, really pay attention to it and I really focus. And my get so focused on, you know, the idea of being able to change myself so quickly and in such an unhealthy and unmanageable way that it loses sight of like having fun and being happy. And, you know, it's so like singular goal focused and everything that it is really difficult to still then think about things like, you know, the dress I just bought fits me right now and it's so nice and it's really pretty and I look really good in it.
Yep.
And I get completely carried away in those moments. And it's like I said, it's they're tied together, the body image and the transition pieces, and trying to make everything feel better at the same time. So,
So the way that I understand them to be different is not necessarily in experience, but in like what happens when you move down that path. So for most people who are struggling with just straight up body image distress, if they were to get the liposuction or lose the weight or, you know, get the Botox or whatever, they don't necessarily feel a decrease in anxiety, preoccupation, or whatever. It might happen temporarily, but a lot of times it comes with like almost an immediate increase somewhere else, right? It's like, okay, well, yeah, now I don't have to worry about my wrinkles, but I'm like obsessing sure. over this other part of me. So yeah. It's pretty provable, essentially, that you're not actually trying to align with what I guess the sort of parallel here would be like an authentically younger version of you, like, or an authentically yes. thinner yeah. version. Whereas with gender, when you start aligning with the self-presentation that actually feels authentic to you, you feel relief as opposed to yeah. either that sort of like spike in anxiety somewhere else, or, you know, it's not so much like that. What's that carnival game yeah. where you're like popping things up?
Yes.
So for most people, I feel like it's simply trial and error to find out. And yeah. there may be a combination of both. Like, I know for me, part of the reason that my breasts were the focus of so much of my body issues for so goddamn long was I can look back and say, partly because of my gender stuff, but also it was a whole yeah. bunch of other stuff. And when I cleared all that away, I was left with like, I can accept this. I can be peaceful with this. And sometimes I daydream about not having them. And that's kind of, yeah. you know, like that has appeal too. So I think having stripped away pieces makes it so that you can have a more clear understanding. But when it feels like so intertwined, like you're describing around sort of, I don't know if litheness is the right word, but that's like what I'm right. imagining the yeah. appeal being, you know, that can be really hard yeah. to pull apart.
Yeah. Although every piece that has come up with what has happened with gender so far, all of the changes that I've seen that have come up so far with my HRT have been so, they have been so welcome. There's some yeah. that I would like to see increase a little more. If we're talking about like breasts and everything, uh-huh. there's some things that I'm still like, okay, baby, come on.
Yeah.
But like, it is. There's some things, and like not just things that have started, but things that have stopped as well. Like, right. like body hair growth and everything. Like, I just feel so much more affirmed and so much better now that some changes happened so fast and were mm-hmm. so like, oh, this is such a relief. Like some of the things that happened felt so good, and things like electrolysis felt
yeah
really good, like get rid of it, which was wild to me because I used to have such big beards and everything, and to be able to, I mean, I'm still going through electrolysis. Electrolysis is like the bane of my existence as well, but the effects of it are wonderful.
Yeah.
So there have been so many things that have been like such a huge
yeah.
relief as well. But like I'm almost like yearning for the continuation of like more of them as
yeah,
well, like
yeah.
there's still like the craving for like I still know that there is more, and if there's more that is dysphoric for me than isn't, like I'm again, my face is something that is quite, and my voice, the voice is one that is not, it is not great, but it's not my least favorite, and then there are some things that I'm not that bothered by. And that's one of the interesting things for me, is the kind of piecing together. And I think that goes along with what we talked about earlier of everyone's transition being a little different, is that some things feel yeah. very dysphoric and some things don't. And it's sometimes what you would think would be automatically dysphoric is not for some people.
Totally.
And it's really interesting that way. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about a moment that you experienced gender euphoria, if you have one.
I mean, the first like bathing suits, like in public pools, was definitely. I mean, even though I brought up the moments before about the public pool being called dad, being like being on vacation in a swimming pool, just floating on like a floaty with like this big hat on and like a one piece bathing suit, was like the moment. Like that is like, and like being in the ocean with like waves hitting me
yeah.
and One piece bathing suits, for some reason, to me are they just feel perfect. They just
Oh,
are
I
like
love that.
the moment of like, because for some reason it's something that I've just always envisioned. And the first time that I got to do that, not just putting one on, but wearing it in front of people I didn't know. So it was, I think that is very
Right.
specifically that moment of being present in front of people that didn't know me, wearing
Yeah.
a one piece bathing suit was just, it was huge. It was just such a wonderful moment. And I can feel how proud I was of myself as well, which is a
Yeah.
big moment. Like, it's a big part of the euphoria for it as well. And it was just such a, it just feels so nice to just be like, to still be able to feel the happiness of that moment
Yeah.
as well. And just to be able to like, be able to recall it is nice too, because yeah, when you can recall those moments, it's so helpful because of how hard some moments can be.
Yeah.
So like, actually feel like the physical, almost like reliving of those moments is so good. But then, like I was saying, that there's, I love when Charlotte does my makeup. I love when
Yeah.
Hannah does my hair. And like there are hundreds of like little things as well. But to
Yep.
have like those really deep feelings of like that first time being
Yeah.
out in front of other people, just prancing around in like sandals and a bathing suit, is just
I love the
to die
pride
for.
in this story, like the self-compassion, the self-celebration, like it just is so joyful.
Yeah, it was lovely. I love
I
it.
love it.
Just thinking
So
about it brings me happiness.
I know it's making me happy and I wasn't even there. What would you wish for listeners to take away from this episode? Or if it's a more interesting question, what do you wish more people knew about the experience of transitioning?
I think it's kind of the same again. I suppose it depends. To trans people
Yeah.
themselves, it's just about, or like to gender non-conforming people, or to anyone experiencing any level of like working through their own gender, it's to be gentle and to not think that there is any rush to an end point, and to understand that there is difficulty, and that's
Yeah.
okay, and that there are happy points, and that that's okay, and that there are sad points, and that's okay, and that there is, while you do see so much hatred from people who have no idea what we're experiencing and aren't interested in what we're experiencing, there's so many loving, kind people with in our community who want to see you continue to grow.
Yeah.
And I think that what I would ask people who aren't in that community is just to watch us and ask sometimes, like, do you need something? And not to assume that we need
Yeah.
something, because a lot of
Yeah.
times people are doing okay, or even if they do need something, maybe it's not from you. So to think
Right.
that, you know, to think that maybe you aren't the solution for problems, but that your solution, the thing that we may need you to do, is to go talk to those angry people who are not listening
Right.
to trans people. So a lot of the time, what people need to do is take on the angry people and talk to the angry people, because
Yeah.
it's really exhausting to always talk to the angry people and you're the person they're angry at. So I really just want to talk about the kind of gentleness and
Yeah.
happiness that can exist within us, because I'm now feeling happy and gentle because we just brought up a really
Yeah.
kind memory. But
Yeah.
there are hard moments that it is nice to have that community support around. And it's really
Yep.
nice when sometimes people outside the community kind of take on some of the yuck growth,
Yeah.
you know, taking on the
Totally.
people creating bills that are crappy.
Amen
So,
to that.
yeah.
And anybody listening curious about how to be an ally, that's a pretty good place to start. And also I feel like this like lovely permission summary that you just gave for folks who are questioning or exploring or, you know, somewhere in their own process with gender is like, it's okay to feel bad and for it to be hard, and it's okay for it to feel good and wonderful. Like, it's the most human permission and compassion summary I've ever heard, and
Definitely.
it's so accurate.
Yeah. And it can happen 2 minutes apart. Like, there's no, it
absolutely
may
right.
not happen one day, and then 3 weeks later, it can happen almost simultaneously.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So, yeah.
All right. Well, can you tell everybody where to find you if they want to continue connecting, following your work, whatever?
Yeah. So, right now, primarily, I am on Instagram at the M Reynolds. And if I start podcasting or blogging again, I almost forget where exactly I'm sharing things these days. My brain is full of medications these days. So yeah, I think that the M Reynolds on Instagram is where I kind of launch everything from. So if people want to follow
Perfect.
me there, that would be so appreciated.
I love it. Everyone, I highly recommend going over and following. It's just wonderful, as you can tell from this conversation. It's like shooting straight and being real raw and transparent, and also a lot of joy and affirmation and permission and compassion. And it's just wonderful. So, thank you so much for being here. This was such a lovely conversation. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you sharing your insights, your experience, your journey with me and the audience. It was so lovely to have you here. And everybody who's listening, thank you so much. And I will catch you next week. Hey everyone, I'm Jesse Nealand, and I want to take a moment to thank you for listening to this episode of the This Is Not About Your Body podcast. I put out new episodes every Tuesday, so be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss it. And if you really enjoyed it, please go ahead and leave me a review. Also, if you're looking for more information about body neutrality or you want to work with me, you can find me at my website, jessenealand.com. Or you can just purchase my book, Body Neutral, A Revolutionary Guide to Overcoming Body Image Issues, wherever you buy books, ebooks, or audiobooks. We can also connect on Instagram or TikTok. My handle is Jesse Nealand. And because I make this podcast available for free and without any sponsors or ads, you can also feel free to show your support using the Patreon link in the show notes. And know that your support, if you decide to participate, is always very much appreciated. Lastly, thank you to my brother, Jason Nealand, for creating the music that plays at the beginning of the show. And thank you for listening, learning, and moving toward personal and collective body liberation.